It's no surprise that updating the electricity grid today will make for a better tomorrow. Increased self-sufficiency is just one of the benefits. The Great Grid Upgrade will also boost the economy and create new green jobs. And best of all, you can continue doing the things you love, like watching the latest epic nature documentary or listening to this podcast while caring for the planet too. Find out more at nationalgrid.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
Hello. You're listening to the Blogcast, the nature and countryside podcast from BBC Countryfile magazine. My name's Fergus Collins, and today we're talking about walking, but in the context of a curious new film, The Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry, which stars Penelope Wilton and Jim Broadbent, and is a tale about a man in his 60s who embarks on a 450-mile pilgrimage across Britain to see a dying friend. Blogcast regular Maria Hodson went to see the film and meet Penelope and Jim, as well as the original book's author and writer of the screenplay, Rachel Joyce. And they talked about the project and their own connections to the countryside. Then later, Maria and I tested the power of walking with a trip to the Mendip Hills near Bristol.
First of all, thank you for a beautiful film, which I thought was really wonderfully portrayed, particularly in the characters of Harold and Maureen. Harold Fry's impromptu 600-mile walk has a transformative effect on him and his relationship. What do you think it is about Harold walking through the land that has that effect? And can you empathise with that? Have you ever had a similar experience of finding walking to be a powerful therapy?
Perhaps not quite that, but I love walking and walking on my own from time to time and always enjoy it and always get something out of it. And don't, I was writing something once and I was walking along and then I couldn't get my head around the next bit of the writing. Then I saw an owl coming up, flying up the hedgerow towards me, and I thought, I got down and lay down on the ground, and the owl came along and hovered over my head, looking down at me, to the extent that I was quite frightened that it was going to swoop down. So I flinched and it went off. Then I walked on, and what I was trying to write was completely unlocked, and then it inspired me to carry on. So those sort of things can happen on walks.
Wonderful. I was worried for a moment you're going to say that what you were going to write was lost forever.
So yes, I thought
I'm glad it was an epiphany in the form of an owl. That's wonderful. Thank you. A lot of the film was shot on location, and it appears from the film that you walked quite a substantial number of miles. What was your step count, do you know?
My step count was less than some of the crew, by quite a large amount, actually. The more junior the crew, the further they ran. The runners ran and ran, mm-hmm. and that was so. But I did a fair amount, but the youngsters did more, because they had to, wherever I was, they had to run up to me and then run back to the camera and run up and take the something and run back again. So I had it easy, really. But I enjoyed my walking.
Did you have a favourite stretch or area in the film?
I think the Northumberland Moors coming down to Berwick in the rain was the most exciting bit, really. That was driving on, and I enjoyed that. And I didn't realise that actually south of the border was so wild as it was there. I thought that it felt like we were well into Scotland, actually, but it was great.
So there were some new experiences, maybe areas that you hadn't covered before.
Yeah, completely, yes. Lots of areas I hadn't covered at all.
And Maureen's character is quite stuck, both in her ways and geographically. She sort of says a few times to Harold that, well, or suggests that she couldn't do what he's doing.
No.
Do you think that there are some people who just do not have that in them? Or do you think deep down, maybe Maureen could as well? That
I think
something...
Maureen, after at the end of the film, she said she certainly could start to walk. I think there are people who they don't think in those terms. I mean, I happen to be a walker, so I have walking holidays. So I know that part of the coast very well. I walked from Berwick-on-Tweed down to Bamborough Castle and in Craister and then down to Sea Houses and then down on that coastline. And it's a wonderful walk. But I don't think Maureen has ever thought about it. She didn't think that Harold never thought about it. And she says at one point, the furthest you've walked is from the front door to your car. You've never walked anywhere in your life before. So it's a revelation to Harold. And it becomes as a great saviour in the end to Harold. And of course, as Rachel says, Harold has never walked anywhere, so he doesn't go on the nice footpaths. He walks along the roads that he knows. You know, he doesn't go through the picturesque places because he wouldn't know where those are. He's just a novice walker. But I think if I was thinking about it, if there was a life afterwards, which I hope there would be for Harold and Maureen, they would certainly work out a plan and do some very good walking together, hopefully.
Yes, I think we can imagine that, can't we?
I think we can. I think they'd enjoy that.
That makes my heart very happy. I love to think of it. So you're a keen walker yourself. Do you have a particular area that you love walking? Like, and what does it represent to you? What does it do for you?
It
walking?
Represents a freedom, and also you think very... It's a wonderful thing, walking. I took it up when I was in my late 40s, and I've walked every day since then. I walk every morning. If I'm not working, I go through all the parks and round London and so on. It's a great freedom. And if there's nothing else that you achieve that day, you've gone for a walk and you've seen... Also, it's the best exercise and you see the world and the seasons change. I mean, at the moment, the parks are looking wonderful with all the blossom coming out the last few days because it's suddenly warmer. So you notice a great deal. The thing about walking is that you're going at a pace where you do notice things, where you're zipping past even on a bike or running, you don't see it. Walking is the best.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to meet you.
Thank you.
The book and the film both beautifully capture the extraordinarily transformative power of walking.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you what it is about the sort of simple act of walking that remains so powerful across cultures and religions and why you chose to capture that, because you do so brilliantly.
Thank you. I think for me it's to do with stepping away from your stuff, from what you're familiar with, that moment when you realise that you just need to... Well, in walking, I think it's you kind of get a rhythm, you can reassess, you can look back at what you've done. I think it just sort of opens a space that you maybe didn't even know was available to be opened. And I think those conversations that you have with yourself about the past are also so powerfully influenced by the moment. You're so much more aware of the moment when you're out of the familiar, you know. So I think it's the kind of conflict or the kind of transition between the two that is so powerful in walking for me.
And do you have a lot of personal experience of walking? Is it something that you love yourself and do for pleasure and for processing?
Yeah, I do. I do walk a lot and it's very important to me. I'm actually I'm a big dawn walker is my thing. So I really love, I mean, I love dawn as a time of day, but I find it an incredibly positive time of day. And I think it's also, if you're quite a solitary person as I am, you can sort of walk. I mean, sometimes it's just as if the world is just waking up for me. You know, when you just see the light and I mean, I'm like Harold in that I find it very moving knowing that people are safe in their houses and that I can just walk kind of unseen. And I love watching the sunrise. So I tend to, if I can hear, normally at the moment I hear birdsong at about 5:30 and I normally get on my coat and just go.
Is there anything in particular that inspired this story of Harold's journey, an older man feeling oppressed, I suppose, and quite closed after a lifetime of trauma, I would say.
I mean, it did come from a very personal place, which stories normally do for me. So I normally am kind of dealing with something of my own I need to work out. And this particular instance, my dad had told us that he was dying, so he had very little time left to live. And actually, he had Queen's cancer, so it's sort of a very specific type of cancer. And we were all obviously sort of, I mean, distressed is not the word. And my way of dealing, I thought, well, I'm going to write this story. I began to see it really, really clearly. I think it is my way of coping with what I don't understand or what I can't, you know, what I can't bear to feel. I try and create something out of it. And it now makes completely sense to me that I was writing a story about an older man saving somebody or believing he could at the moment I was losing my father. And there's sort of, Harold isn't my dad, but there's elements that are the same, you know, wearing the tie and those yachting shoes, you know, things like that. There were crossover points. So I think that was the place it came from. And Harold was such a good person to kind of be in your imagination with. He was a very kind companion.
He is a lovely man. And that's something I notice when I talk to people about the book, is the warmth they feel for Harold as a character. He speaks to so many people. I suppose I've got lots of questions about him, but I was wondering what made you want him to start his journey so unprepared for it.
Yes.
In his yachting shoes, yes. As you said.
And his anorak, yes. And
just putting one foot in front of the other, yeah. And carrying on.
I think it was to do with just finding the essence of the man. I mean, I loved the idea that he would have forgotten his phone. I really didn't want him to have a phone. And now even more, because when I first wrote the story, it was sort of 12 years ago, and phones, I think you didn't. I mean, now the phone is kind of just, you know, it's in our hand all the time. So I loved the idea that this man would just step out of the door thinking he was going to post a letter, completely unequipped, but who just has the knowledge. And I think it's an unconscious knowledge that something has to be broken, something needs to change, and that, which is a kind of classic beginning for a story, really, you know, that the kingdom is asleep, you know, that something is undealt with and that it has to be dealt with, but you don't even know how you're going to do it. And I think that's the kind of courage of him, really, that in his simple, dear way, he commits to the moment.
Have you ever done anything similar? And also, have you walked that route yourself?
No, I haven't walked it, to my shame. And there was a point with the book where I thought, oh no, I can't submit this to the book until I've actually done the entire walk. And then it was my husband who went, this is fiction. You know, like, this is the imagination, which I think we don't talk about enough. You know, that's the wonderful thing that we have. So you take what you know. So I did bits of the walk, but not all of them. But I also had just moved to the place where we live, which is on the edge of Stroud. So it's a very kind of... And I was really so gobsmacked by the landscape that I think... I mean, it was like a love affair. And I think that probably infiltrated the book, that sort of, in me, that awakening sense of, you know, I'd no idea green could be this many colours. So Harold's wonder was my wonder.
That comes across absolutely in your writing. You write in beautiful detail about, especially as Harold becomes more in tune with his environment, about the wildflowers and the plants he finds along the way. Is that something that you notice when you're walking, and do you have that affinity?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, I think you do use, when you're writing, you do have to make a leap into what you don't know. But a starting point for me was always, I'm just hungry for the detail. And it was something I was very acutely aware of as I was walking. It is what I notice, and I take great pleasure in noticing it. So, and also light. I really respond to light, and it was a sort of great joy in the screenplay to realise that I could really kind of lean on light as a way of showing us Harold's kind of growing relationship to the landscape. So it was a very light-filled script.
And I see that in the cinematography, because there's some beautiful shots with the light, in various places.
Yeah.
Which is your actual favourite stretch or area of Britain, both from personal experience and when you watch the film, just visually?
Visually, I can't. I mean, in terms of the film, I think I have to say every bit of it, I'm kind of I love because it's also different. That's what I love about the film. It's such a broad reflection. But in terms of where I love to walk, I have to say I am a home person, and I just love out of my front door into the field. That's where I'm happy.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Rachel.
Thank you. Thank you. You too.
So walking down a path into a wood in the Mendips with Maria, after your adventure, Maria, in London with Jim Broadbent.
Yes.
Having spoken to him about walking, we decided to come out walking and talk about Jim Broadbent and walking.
Yes, that's beautifully circular. It was perhaps an unlikely pilgrimage to London to interview Jim Broadbent and Penelope Wilton, and actually Rachel Joyce. And the film very much interested and moved me because it does look at this epic hike from Kingsbridge in Devon to Berwick-upon-Tweed. And I very much wanted to talk about the joys of walking, but actually the environment in which we were doing the interview was very far removed from...
Yeah, it's funny how the media world... it's a story about walking, so they had you in a hotel in Soho, and you were given very few minutes to talk to this great
seven
man.
7 minutes.
I'm very grateful to... Just while we're here, the smell of wild garlic in the air.
Oh,
goodness,
that's lovely.
We are through, we're just entered a sort of sunny footpath, and there's wild garlic everywhere. It's that time of year. That's kind of the choice. Shame we couldn't get Jim out here. Oh, he'd have loved it, I reckon.
I think he would. In the brief time I got, I managed to gather that both Jim and Penelope are keen walkers, and they use it for different things, partly just the joy of exploring, partly to find inspiration, creative inspiration.
Yeah, that whole sort of unblocking your, as Jim said in the,
in the interview,
an experience that he had with an app, unblocked his sort of creative.
Yeah, I mean, that must have felt so significant to have a magnificent animal like that visit you and say, you are free to write now.
Do you get the same? Do you feel the same when you're out walking? Because we let's face it, we work in a creative industry. No matter how the pressure's on us to create something very fast on a regular basis, it's still, there's a great demand for us to be creative. Do you find that helps being out here?
Definitely. I think even today, this is a wonderful tonic to quite a frenetic day yesterday. And I think any of those occasions, and I think we all get them, where you feel under pressure or stressed and meeting deadlines and busy, one of the best ways to unwind and just step away from all of that is to go for a walk, and it can be anywhere. But just leaving everything behind. I'm actually a huge fan of the solo walk.
Present company. Same.
This is lovely too.
I mean, yes.
Those opportunities to just walk and take in your environment and not particularly have to think of, perhaps that sounds selfish, but not to think of anyone else for a while. Not even really too much of yourself if you don't feel like it, just to take in.
Yeah, I don't think it's selfish. I think it's important to, when we are constantly, there's so many demands. If you have a family, lots of workmates in a communication industry, you're just constantly being nibbled at and, going out walking. Unless you don't like chiff-chaffs. Irritating chiff-chaffs, which I love.
Bleeding chiff-chaffs, chafers chasing me all over the place. Can't get away from them.
Yeah, absolutely.
One here?
That's a chiff-chaff, yeah.
I was expecting more of a distinctive chiff-chaff sound. That sounds more like...
It's more of a zilp-zalp, as they say in German.
What is it in German?
Zilp-zalp.
Zilp-zalp, I love that.
Yeah, it's great, a great word. Great name. I mean, we're in a really good part of the world. I've forgotten how brilliant the Mendips are. If you haven't been to the Mendips, listeners, it is south of Bristol. Hills, beautiful hills. Gosh, and the sun is so warm, we've come round into a sort of rocky... Well, it's the top of Cheddar Gorge, really, but it's one of the sort of spur gorges. And I think a lot of people go to Cheddar and have a sort of lovely time, but missing this peaceful... They're like little mini dales up here. So we've come out as a team today, really, the whole editorial team, to just get away from the deadlines. It definitely, you can see everyone's walking a little bit taller by the end of the day.
It's been lovely, and I know we always, every time we do one of these, we say, oh, we must make it more frequent.
Yeah.
And then, of course, months pass. But
yes, what is that about life? That why, when we love walking and being outdoors, why as a people are we not... It's just very hard. I think it is sort of... I don't know why we have this mental barrier. I wonder if it's part of our psyche that we just... When we get inside and feel snug and safe, we don't want to go and expose ourselves to... Even though it's beautiful and does us good...
Yeah.
I feel that myself, and I'm an outdoors person, and I probably spend more time outdoors than all my friends, but I still sometimes am reluctant to, should I go out and see those rare flowers, or shall I just snuggle with a book?
Exactly. I think there's also a case of being aware that there's not to wait for the perfect time to go for your walk.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a case of just getting out, just stepping out of your front door. Even if you don't feel particularly well prepared, just to go and see what's out there. Because like you say, it's really easy to get into these routines and habits.
Because you live in the inner city, basically.
Yes,
you live in a terrace in the inner city, so you don't have green immediately outside your front door.
Which does make it less enticing to step outside straight away. But if I do, if I walk just a little ways, I'm in some lovely parks, or there's Greenbank Cemetery, which has actually got some wonderfully different trees and beautiful kind of
tombstones.
and
the dead are there.
And the dead, yeah.
Who
was great company, can I say?
Yeah, exactly. You said you like walking alone.
Yeah.
Well, what could be better? Like, you got company, but also not much company.
Yeah. Silent companionship, my favourite.
We were talking about that the other day when I was recording in Ireland. About the perfect walking companion is someone you can have those comfortable silences, companionable silences.
Yes.
As we pass a dog poo bag, freshly laid.
I know, you're absolute bête noire, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah,
be
it's
gone.
Hard to find that person or people. I think in a group, you've just got to surrender to the group. But when it's one other person, you find the right person to walk with, where you can just go, let's not talk right now.
And can I let you in on a secret as well?
You can. You're letting in tens of thousands of people as well.
Sometimes what I do, even though I run the risk of sounding extremely pretentious, if I do want that quiet time with someone who is a particular jabberer, I say, shall we try some mindful walking?
I'm going to watch out for when you say that next.
Yeah. Let the alarm bells ring.
Yeah.
No, it's just actually, it's quite a nice way, although it maybe sounds... it falls differently to different ears, but it's basically an invitation to just walk peacefully for a while.
Oh, that's quite
taking
good.
Taking in your environment.
Because then you're not having an awkward sort of moment where... Because I think everybody, unless you're an absolutely confident talker, walker, whatever, has those moments. I've run out of things to say. I must think of something clever to say to this person I don't know very well.
Yeah.
And maybe if you say... Yeah, should we have a moment? Should we have a moment of mind?
Yeah, should we try some mindful walking?
Yeah. What's that, Maria?
Yes.
Oh,
mindful walking. Walking while saying nothing at all.
Excellent.
Until I say it's okay to start talking again. No, I mean, I actually think, you know, you're just saying that pressure to speak. That does take me back to yesterday in the interview where I actually felt we probably all would have really enjoyed conducting into outside somewhere quite peacefully, ambling along.
Yeah.
And I think most people do. I honestly feel most people feel that they can breathe when you take away some of those urban pressures. Not just urban, they can occur anywhere, but getting outside.
I have encountered people who really, really don't enjoy the countryside and have no interest in wildlife and don't get walking. They'll go to the gym. They live in the city, love it, absolutely get everything they need from the city, and get nothing. And I'm trying to understand that, but also, there just are some people who simply, it doesn't work for them, which is, maybe it's an evolution of the humankind to cope with. But yes, they do exist.
They do, but do you feel, I wonder whether that's potentially slightly younger people. I certainly, when I was growing up, I grew up in London as well, and I did have almost a kind of an arrogance about this is all I need, and I'm moving and I'm shaking and I'm being in all the, you know, the cool places. Yeah.
Well, you were
being
cool.
Around people.
Oh, you are cool, but you are really cool.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's always when I try and say something clever.
But I think that. But thank you. Yes.
Yeah. There was something nice said in there. Yeah,
I think that as I got a bit older.
Yeah, just here, this, we want to capture this if we can. A little bird that just fluttered there is a redstart. And we might get its song. There are some other. There are some linnets here, but it's not going to do it now. It just sang briefly there. Redstart fanciers, if they can hear it on the. Will know. There's a red start anyway. We're in a little valley where there's a few, there's only a handful of red starts in the whole of the Mendips, but we found two today. So.
We've heard two. I haven't seen one yet, but there was gentleman with his enormous lens.
And he struggled to see it as well, yeah. So they're quite hard to see unless you're kind of willing to spend a lot of time waiting till they. Also, they've only just arrived. They're a bit sort of. They're kind of nervous and seem to be flitting around a lot, whereas once they establish territories, they'll happily sit by the path and sing, and then you'll see them much better. I think it's just like, I want to sing, but I've got to feed, I'm hungry, I've had a long journey, so maybe that's my interpretation.
Yeah,
because they will have only arrived this week. We're right mid-April. It's probably the earliest I've ever heard a red start. So. Anyway, you were saying something much more interesting. I took us down the red start
no,
path.
No, I love the red start part, and I was just wondering if they're also feeling frenetic and like beholden to deadlines.
It's absolutely.
Got to, totally. Just arrived, got to move in, must settle down. Oh my goodness.
Who'd be a migratory bird? It's like fly, you get this urge of having, you're sunning yourself in sub-Saharan Africa, lots of food, enjoying yourself, and then suddenly, oh, what's the time? Oh, it's late March, I've got to go. And then it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks flight, arrive. Resident birds have already picked all the best nesting spots. You've got to kind of find some food, find a mate. Don't really know the neighbourhood very well. It's like you've moved house to a new city. Dreadful.
And they do this twice a year? I mean, well, coming in, they'll go, and then they've got to go back again.
Yeah, they probably don't last more than a couple of migrations, these small birds. But
I'll remember that whenever I next have to move house.
Yeah,
I don't have it anywhere near as hard as a migratory bird.
Yeah, but they don't have to spend quite as much as we do.
That's true. Yeah. Or worry about damp.
Yeah. Well, you say that. Yeah. A wet spring, and they will not do well. But it's actually a perfect spring at the moment. There's been enough rain, there's sunshine.
Yeah.
It's warm.
An abundance of wild garlic.
Garlic here, which some of our colleagues are just taking a few for what are you going to be making?
Well, I'm hoping for some wild garlic and cheese scones.
This is Margaret, who long-term listeners will know from the podcast. This interviewed many a fair guest.
So on our menu is wild garlic and cheese scones, which obviously you will be bringing in for us all to share.
Oh, obviously. It'll be a picnic next week, I think.
Fantastic, that's exciting. Well, Marie, you're going to join us in the studio a little bit later when we get back. We've got some lovely listener letters and some other treats to share with you. So,
excellent, I can't wait.
See you then.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
So from the Mendips, Maria has joined me in the studio. Lovely to see you. Thank you, Maria, for coming in.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Especially as Jack and Hannah are away this week. So great to have you helping out in the plot chat.
Thank you. Anytime.
Well, that was fun. And brilliant to have spoken to those stars of the silver screen. Rachel, who is the author of the book.
And also author of the screenplay.
Oh, amazing. Okay. Well, great. You can help out. You can step in. And first thing, well, as always, well, we had that lovely day out and we had all those fantastic sort of meetings with birds and we recorded lots of birds and we recorded that lovely chat. But we always do, we've started to do a sightings and happenings. So have you been out and about since then? Have you been up to anything that...
I have since then, but my adventures have been more water-based since our amazing walk in the hills. I then turned to the coast on Sunday and I was at Clevedon Marine Lake where I managed a cold water swim. And it was incredibly
cold. You are an aquatic. You are sort of semi-aquatic.
Yeah, I suppose I love the water. I don't excel at anything, but that doesn't stop me. I'm like very happy to have a splash or a surf or a paddle. And yeah, just love being in water.
So you went to Clevedon Marine Lake. What is that? Yeah. Is that sort of something that fills up a high tide? Is that the one?
Or
is
it's it actually, it's fill, it's has water all the time. Yeah, but it's just what they do is they do test the water. So given in this day and age there are concerns and lots of wariness about water, it's quite nice to know that the water there has been checked relatively recently and regularly.
So there is some clean water still in Britain that can swim. I mean, we joke, but this is...
Yeah, seriously, yeah.
I would kind of explode. I explode quite regularly with anguish and anger at the state of our rivers. But so that's lovely. So you've been on cold water swimming?
Yes. Yeah, that was on Sunday. And then on Monday, I was at The Wave, which is Britain's... In fact, I'm not sure if it's maybe Europe's, but it's an inland surfing lake near Bristol.
Wow.
And yeah, they kind of generate a mock... Well, it's not a mock wave, it is a wave. They generate it quite regularly and then you can practice.
Artificial way of generating waves. And you can surf.
You can surf there. It's fantastic. And people come from all over the country to practice because obviously with surfing, it's not... You have to be chasing the waves a lot of the time. But in this instance, you just go right there. And there's
That's
a guaranteed
great.
Wave.
That's the modern way, isn't it? Can't go off to the natural world for a nice surf. You've got to go and have them made by fabricated in a wave factory. Sounds great, though.
It is actually great because there's a side of me I think that was a bit wary almost that it might feel too manufactured, but it is a lovely sight. It's a nice day out, and I did manage to pop up several times and then fall flat.
Popping up is. For the onion. I've never surfed. I've bodyboarded and I enjoyed it, but I've never surfed. Popping up is what? Standing up? I'm
yes,
guessing
it's
standing
exactly
up.
That. Yeah, oh, exactly.
So
yeah.
You popped up a couple of times. So
I did quite, yeah, relatively regularly. And then also face planted, which isn't a surfing term, but I'm sure most people are familiar with it.
Yeah. Excellent. Had a look at the fish.
Yeah.
I remember reading a book about people who climb tall trees. This is an aside that... Yeah, people who climb these really tall trees in America, and it's incredibly dangerous, really high up, these redwoods that go on for miles or touch the moon sort of trees. And they would kind of have these adventures high above the ground and find all these biospheres and habitats up there. But their term for when they fell to their deaths was taking a dirt nap. Which I think is just,
it's
the
dark
casual
humor.
Dark humor, yeah, because they're always on the edge of this sort of thing, but that's what made it incredible. It's called The Wild Trees, a story of passion and daring with the world's last true explorers. It's by Richard Preston, so I can recommend that. But don't take a dirt nap.
I'll just read it. I won't go climbing to the top of any of them, yeah.
So you've been basically having waterborne adventures, and you've recorded a waterborne adventure for this series.
I have, yes, paddleboarding along the Wye, which was magnificent. That was, it actually took place at the end of last year. And I think it's a good time to release it quite soon because obviously people have the summer and autumn stretching ahead for paddling adventures.
We'll get onto that.
Yeah, sorry.
Just someone needs to edit it first.
Yeah, exactly. No rush, Maria.
Yes, but we'd love to release it. But wonderful. What a great, great, great river. And we talked about pollution and that sort of thing. You've done a piece for us on the people who are fighting the insidious pollution along the length of what should be one of our most glorious rivers. So did you? And so is that part of your tale, or is it more just the joy of paddleboarding above the water and away from the...
There is mention of pollution. There's mention of kind of the great pressures on the Wye as well, because obviously it is such a popular river, it's such a popular stretch that in summer it becomes the kind of... It's swarmed, essentially.
Yeah.
And what that means, both in terms of... That's a boon to businesses, but it's not such a boon to the river itself. So it's how does the Wye manage the various pressures it deals with?
I know fishermen get cross with people and paddleboards and canoes, dragging them over the gravel where the fish spawn and the fish eggs and fish fry are lurking. So I know there's some tension there. Well, it'll be really good. Can't wait to listen to it. I haven't heard it yet, so that's one for later in the season.
No pressure.
No pressure at all to produce that one, Maria.
I've had lots of watery excitement. Have you had any amazing wildlife sightings recently?
I did. I went on a dawn chorus walk with a family. Got up at like ridiculous hour to go to Black Mountains College in near Talgarth in the Banai Bechiniog.
Well pronounced.
I don't think if Hannah was here, she'd give me a beat me over the head with a stick for getting that wrong. But and it was great. It was just lovely to be up so early, and quite a large number of people. Really fun to go out and just. My son was more reluctant.
I was going to say congratulations on getting a near teenager.
Once he got to the pastries at the end of the walk, he was much happier. But it was kind of love. It's just a beautiful part of the world, the kind of top edge of the Brecon Beacons, the Banai, and just lovely to hear spring bird song. But apart from that, a few things. We've got lots planned. Next week I'm hopefully going to Knepp to listen to nightingales, so that's going to be exciting.
Famous Knepp. Have you been before?
No. So I'm hoping to record with... I've been very, very generously invited down by Isabella Tree and Charlie Burrell to listen to the nightingales, and we'll have a chat about Isabella's new book. So that I'm incredibly excited about. I'm going to be camping among nightingales. And as with all podcast promises, who knows what may turn up. But it's the best time of year to be out and about. And as always, please do send in your recordings or your thoughts about spring, the podcast. Always good to hear from listeners. You can contact me, and I'm on editor@countryfile.com. Always just send in your joyful thoughts, because this season is so rare and precious. And he comes around once a year. I'm going to ask you, Maria, to read this fantastic letter, which we've had in from Sian McGill. And I'm going to hand this over to you, because it's a cool one.
Okay.
It includes a sound, so we'll play that afterwards. But
wishing you all a belated happy Easter. I love the podcast and listen every week, usually while doing my latest paint by numbers project. Prior to succumbing to COVID 2 weeks ago, I was out walking in the ancient woodland surrounding Skipton Castle, North Yorkshire, and heard this amazing bird. I'm new to birdsong and have been unable to identify it. It sounds like it's saying, "Chirrup, pleased to meet ya." Do any of you recognise it? I can really recommend this beautiful woodland, cared for by the Woodland Trust. The castle sits on a craggy high hill above the woodland. Great for a future podcast. Looking forward to many more.
Brilliant. Well, let's hear that. Well, we'd love to come up to Yorkshire. We must come up to Yorkshire a bit more often for the podcast. But let's hear that sound. That's the chirrup. Pleased to meet you.
I can hear it. Amazing. It does sound like
it's so really interesting. Well, that one at the end, there's several birds in there. I mean, I've had a listen, and I think I've recognized most of them. The one towards the end is a chaffinch, that sort of pleased to meet you
type. Is it okay
descending? And the one right at the beginning was a wren, that blast at the very beginning. So and in between there are a few blue tits, and I think even sparrows. There's all sorts of good stuff there. But thank you, Sian. That's great. Lovely taste of Skipton. And yes, we will try and come to spread our net wider as far as we can get on a day with a recorder. So, Sian, that is our wonderful email of the week. our listener email of the week, and we'll be sending you a book, which is by Stephen Moss. It's 10 Birds That Changed the World, and I hope you enjoy it. So yes, I should say to everyone, if your email is, or your sound recording is chosen as our listener email of the week, we give you a lovely book. We'll send you a lovely book from the podcast library. And so, yes, and that includes sounds. So it's a great time of year for recording birdsong. Send them in. Love to hear them. And yeah, we'll hopefully include them in the podcast. Oh, finally, some pond news. Pond news alert. And last year, around this time of year, I had a lot of pond news, generally to do with disasters in my pond. And there's been another disaster in my pond where I collected a load of frog spawn. It's almost the same story as last year. I collected a load of frog spawn, which I only collect frog spawn that I find in puddles, which are drying up. And yeah. I think give them a lease of life. And I don't have frogs in my pond. Anyway, I took a load back, found lots on a lane after heavy rain. And it was definitely going to die. So packed it all up in a bag, took it down to put it in the pond. It all hatched. Brilliant. Massive tadpoles. 3 weeks later, they've all gone. And,
oh, no.
And I know last year the problem was that I had a fish in my pond, which had sneaked through. I'd accidentally introduced some little fry, which had grown big on tadpoles. So something else. And that fish is definitely gone because the pond almost dried up over last summer and there was nothing. I think there might be a big population of newts in the pond that are just feasting on tadpoles, but it's like, I just can't get it to work.
So last year there was no success.
No success.
This year,
no
it's
success.
It's the same story.
Same story. But the newts are breeding in the pond.
I mean, maybe that's what you need to focus on.
Just call it a newt pond.
It's your newt pond.
There we go. That's pond news. Pond news. That's pond news for this week.
It's tabloid stuff, though.
Yeah, I know. Who knows what can. The excitement. But that's probably it for this week. Thank you, Maria, for joining me. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And join us again next week, where we're on another lovely adventure in the countryside. But for now, it's goodbye from me and the team.